And now we bring you a story of women and war dating back nearly 100 years. World War I marked the first time American women joined the military in large numbers. They included about 3,000 women from Massachusetts who were determined to serve in some capacity, many as volunteers. Among them was Margaret Hall of Newton. She lived a comfortable, educated life, went to Bryn Mawr College in Pennsylvania, joined the women's suffrage movement in New York, and spent time traveling in Europe. Hall moved back to Boston to run her family's woolen mill after her father died. But at age 42, unmarried and increasingly interested in the war effort, she left for France to work for the Red Cross. That was in 1918, and she stayed in Europe through the end of the war and into the following summer. Margaret Hall documented her time there in a huge collection of letters and diary entries and photographs. Now the Massachusetts Historical Society has compiled her writings and pictures into a book and an exhibit, both titled Letters and Photographs from the Battle Country. We paid a visit to the exhibit earlier this week.
This is the essence of this very powerful experience brought together.
And this was our enthusiastic tour guide.
I'm Peter Drummey. I'm the Stephen T. Riley Librarian of the Massachusetts Historical Society.
The exhibit begins with a display of World War I era posters promoting the war effort. One reads, "Joan of Arc saved France. Woman of America, save your country." Peter Drummey told us about the various roles women played overseas.
Many were working as nurses, often not with U.S. forces, but with the French Army or the British Army, but also working in aid to and comfort for soldiers. That is, Margaret Hall worked at a canteen, a sort of rest stop at a railroad junction behind the front, so served food and drink to soldiers passing through who would be soldiers from all the Allied nations. She says at some point that she saved donuts, so when American soldiers came through, there would be donuts for
them. You know, from flipping through the book the Mass Historical Society has put together, in some ways it was menial work. She was kind of a cafeteria worker, but was she as much there to be a cheerleader and morale supporter?
I think it served both those purposes. This is a brutal war that by the time she arrives has been going on for more than 4 years. These are soldiers who are living in this subterranean world along the battlefront.
Along the trenches.
Yeah. And this is where she's serving is only maybe 15, 20 miles behind that battlefront. Where she's living is bombed from the air, and the bombardment, the artillery bombardment, is visible on the horizon. So you're right, she's essentially working in an enormous cafeteria that's serving thousands of soldiers, but also thousands of injured and wounded soldiers are passing through, so it's relief, small things that can be given to those soldiers as well.
While Margaret Hall was there, she was taking detailed notes. She kept this voluminous journal. Can you show us some of the end product of that journal?
Sure. It's just in this next adjoining room. So Margaret Hall came back to the United States in the summer of 1919, and she sat down and she took her diary. People near the battlefront were not supposed to keep diaries lest they be captured, their diaries be found and reveal useful military information, or take pictures. She, perhaps being a mature woman, did exactly what she wanted and both took photographs and kept a diary.
And got away with it.
And got away with it and illustrated her account with her own photographs that she had taken.
And we should note that these accounts are like books. These are not
entries. This is essentially a handmade book, page after page of long, detailed records drawn from her experience in France, of her observations of first her experience as a volunteer, and then after the armistice in the fall of 1919, she spent months traveling the entire length of the battlefront, essentially from Switzerland to the English Channel, carefully describing the places soldiers had fought.
She's very descriptive of the landscape, which at times she says is unearthly because of all the devastation it's gone through. Are those pictures on this far wall an example of that?
Yes. What we've tried to do is an overview of the battlefront. She was especially touched as she traveled through it that she'd come across lonely graves decorated with the rosette of the French army or the Teutonic cross for German soldiers with their helmets.
There's one on this wall that's basically a cross, a large grave marker that has a soldier's hat on top of it. You know, presumably presumably that dead soldier.
Exactly. When she got to Verdun, and she got there months after the end of the war, she's struck by the awful splendor of it. She calls it the greatest
night. Awful splendor?
Yes, it's sort of like the gigantic ruined landscape. She calls it the greatest nightmare of my life. But at the same time, she's struck by how when she's walking across this desolate landscape, pockmarked with shell holes, she says in some places with a skeleton in every shell hole, and the fields are covered with violets. So you have this contrast. Where she served in the Champagne country, underneath the topsoil, the land is chalk. So when the topsoil was blown away, it really does look like the moon. I don't think there is anything essentially like it in human history. This enormous swath of land has just been made essentially unrecognizable to human
eyes.
These
photos do look like moonscapes in a way, like not the surface of the earth, but a different place.
These are images perhaps more familiar to us, but probably things that people in 1919 might want to look away from, not see as being how they wanted to recollect the war or experience.
But my sense from having read through the book is that that's a key part of what she was trying to not let people ignore, the enormous impact on the landscape, the people, the economy. She didn't want people to deny the devastation.
No, and I think that in a way, she had a book that was before its time. And the immediate aftermath of the war, people wanted to celebrate a victory, allies working together, maybe not look at the stark reality of what they had wrought.
Peter, why did Margaret Hall go? She was financially secure. She was educated. She didn't have to. Was this service? Was this an adventure? Was it tourism?
All of those things that it sounds like a criticism, but there is a sort of battlefield tourism. People who move towards the sound of the guns. That is, most American women volunteers were serving relatively far back from the battlefront. But in both instances, the people we're showing material for are people who were trying to get as close as possible to it. They both thought that what they were doing was an important service.
Early in the book, very early, there's a quote from Margaret Hall in which she says, "In my day, you could not get married and see the world. I chose to see the world." So you get the sense that she may have had a comfortable, easy life, but she was itching for something different.
Exactly. I mean, here's a woman of great accomplishment. She's running the family business. She's active in the women's suffrage movement, is widely traveled, has lived in France before the First World War. Nevertheless, this is an opportunity that presents herself to be of real service both to her country, but also this idea that the war was being fought on behalf of humanity.
What's your favorite part of this exhibit?
I think the most powerful image in the show, and this shows her as a photographer because she takes several versions of it, the image she decided to counterpose with her description of the armistice when the guns fell silent on November 11th, 1918, of a woman in this French nurse's outfit facing one of these lonely graves, a cross on a chalk landscape.
This was on Armistice Day, a day of celebration?
Yes.
And here we see someone deep in mourning, mostly.
Deep in mourning, and it goes exactly with how she describes it. I think all the time I've worked here, I've always thought about this passage, which is her description of Armistice Day. This was the day of all days that I wanted to be in France to see the celebration, and I had to stay in the canteen so that I never heard a church bell or a single thing except one cannon. When that went off at 11 o'clock, all the soldiers cried out, c'est la paix, la guerre est finie, and continued to eat their rations. No throwing up of hats, no singing of the Marseillaise, nothing. France is too sad, and the price it has had to pay is too great to have any real demonstration of joy. It is simply an awful relief to have the slaughter stopped. That is all.
Wow. Yeah, it tells you so much loss and suffering that by the time it's over, you almost can't appreciate it.
The difference between winning and losing, there is none for most of the people living in France.
So she wanted people to remember the suffering in Europe and try to help ease it a little?
I think that's right. I really think by doing that on the personal scale. This is my story of my time here. These are things that I saw with my own eyes. These are the images I made of it myself. Maybe more directly appeal to people who would have the wherewithal to provide that sort of relief support. In fact, it's interesting. We've just published her letters and photographs from the battle country, as she titles it. But it's interesting that she assembled it as a book, but did not publish it.
Is there any doubt in your mind that she wanted it published?
I think she would be pleased with it, perhaps pleased that someone else had brought it to the attention of a much wider audience. But it's hard to think of all this effort not now being 100 years later almost finally complete.
Peter Drummy, thank you for this tour.
My pleasure.
That's Peter Drummy, a librarian for the Massachusetts Historical Society, giving me a tour earlier this week of Letters and Photographs from the Battle Country. It's an exhibit and companion book about Newton native Margaret Hall, and it's on display at Mass Historical Society through next January. You can find more information on our website, radioboston.org. Coming up, there's more of the show. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.